Welcome to Are You Quizzing Me? I'm Vineet Nair with my co-host Aditya Kashyap. This is a quizzing trivia podcast show. Join us as we dive deep into history, science, sport, pop culture, and so much more. Let's get quizzing.
All right, welcome back everybody to another episode of Are You Quizzing Me? As you can tell by my introduction that Vineet is not around, and this is Aditya Kashyap introducing the show today. We do have, of course, a guest joining us, and that would be our recurring quizmaster, Hari Krishna. What's up, HK?
I think I'm going to call myself Hari Krishna, old faithful Vedaranyan, because I feel like whenever Vineet is done with something, I seem to be the, the reliable replacement. So, yeah.
Those are massive shoes that you are expected to fill, and you do it brilliantly. So, if anything, that is a compliment to you and your quizzing skills, HK. Anyways, so... back to the usual programming, and of course that means I have to start with answering last week's question. Now, last week's question was, how would we in India celebrate a royal wedding as was celebrated in Europe when the Russian princess Marie married into the British royal family, and that's how the Marie biscuit came to be. So how would we do something similar in India? And of course in India, royal weddings in today's world obviously mean Bollywood weddings. And I was thinking of which biscuit in India qualifies as a good celebration. And I realized hide and seek is a brilliant example, because the entire time leading up to the wedding, the couple is trying to hide from media. And all we are trying to do as faithful followers of Bollywood, the royal family of India, all we are trying to do is seek them out. So hide and seek is how we celebrate royal family weddings in India. And that is the answer for last week's question, but let's move on to some actual trivia for this week. HK, do you want to start us off with a question?
Insider note, he came up with that answer literally 5 minutes before the show recorded. So, so I'm not even going to try to understand that answer. But okay, my first question, hopefully a fun one, which has a filmy link as well. So Starship, the 165-foot tall spacecraft that SpaceX developed to take people and cargo to Mars and other distant destinations, was supposed to have a relatively blunt head. But of course, the SpaceX chief, whom I shall not name, told his engineers to make the Starship head more sharp. What 2012 creation from the entertainment world served as the inspiration for him to change the shape of the rocket head?
2012 cinematic inspiration. And did you say this is Bollywood or was it just cinema?
No, I just said cinema. Yeah.
Ah, okay. So, 2012. I'm trying to think of a conehead kind of character. Oh, I know. There's another movie that came out in 2012, I believe. Was it the Avengers, the headquarters? It was conical in shape.
No, it was not the Avengers. Also, you're taking this way too seriously. This is, we're talking about the head of SpaceX chief. And the key thing to look out for is that it had a blunt head, and then it, you know, was made to become more sharp. Which movie was an inspiration for this? Yeah.
So, okay, let me clarify then. Does the movie itself have something sharp and shaped like what a sharp-headed rocket would look like, or is it something else?
So there is a scene, a very famous scene in the movie where a character in the movie makes that same request. So that was the inspiration for this.
Oh, interesting. Can you make this sharper? Can you make this pointier? Oh, I cannot think of anything which comes close to that. Was it Dark Knight Rises by any chance?
You're thinking too serious. Think of... comedy movie. Yeah. If you think of comedy and character comedy, who's the first actor who comes to mind when you think of character comedy in Hollywood?
Character comedy. Sacha Baron Cohen.
So at 2012, what movie did he make?
Oh, is it The Dictator?
Yes.
What did he, but I don't even think I've watched the movie entirely. I've only seen scenes from the movie. So what is the dialogue?
Okay, go look up the scene. Basically, obviously in that movie, he's the fictitious head of, or is the dictator of this kind of Middle Eastern nation. And so his scientist comes up to him saying that we've developed a nuclear bomb. And then the bomb looks like rounded. And then he's like, you know, everyone will laugh at me if it is not pointy. And then there's this whole exchange about where he got that inspiration from, which is basically from Roadrunner comics or from Daffy Duck comics. And that is apparently supposed to be the SpaceX rocket, you know, became more pointy and sharp.
So the SpaceX redesign initiated by the head of SpaceX was done based off of this movie is allegedly true or is it like a verified fact?
I think it's actually true. Yeah. I think it was actually true. Yeah.
I am not surprised. Why am I not surprised? Okay, great. All right, so I will move from all this modern technology and stupidity, if I may say so, to something more historical. This place was a landmark in London, and tourists would actually visit it alongside Westminster Abbey. It started functioning in 1676, and it appeared so opulent that it was compared to none other than the Palace of Versailles. This place gives its name to a modern word, which would be synonymous with mad or lunatic. Can you tell me which place I'm talking about?
It's near Westminster Abbey, 1676, is it, mm-hmm. you said?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. What do you think of Downing Street, 10 Downing Street? Because 1676 also is, I think, around the time when, I think 1666 was when Charles II was beheaded, and I think the whole Cromwell era was happening. If I'm not mistaken, or maybe I've got my English history a little wrong. Does it have something to do with a historical event, or no, not at all?
No, I would not focus so much on any specific historical event. In fact, I don't know if the year will lead you to it. I would, in fact, right. encourage you to think more along the lines of the word for mad or lunatic that is inspired by this particular institution or building.
Crazy, or what else is there for mad or lunatic? I mean, asylum, but that's like just an institution.
Because you said asylum, actually, let me give you a bit more of a clue. So this place was an asylum, hospital for those with mental health issues. It was considered very opulent from the outside. However, the inside, the treatment of the patients, and as it were back in the day, was very subpar and in poor conditions, right? So that's where the word actually comes from. Okay, so let me actually also clarify this. The word itself would not directly mean mad or lunatic in the sense of an individual, but more of the setting, lunacy or madness.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, so like doghouse, is that something like, getting close with something like that? Or
that's a good guess, but no. It's not very close. It's not.
Like, I remember because you said opulent outside, inside, through the looking glass. I'm thinking of like all these kind of Mad Hatter. I'm thinking of like all these, if somebody remember Alice in Wonderland, but then like, I don't know, I'm probably going cold at this point.
No, not that, yeah.
Is it a place that is, if you've been to London or something, is it still around basically? Is the name still used in London?
Okay, so this particular place is still in operation. It is still a psychiatric hospital in London.
Okay.
And, it has such a famous history. It has inspired several horror books, films, and TV series. So it is ingrained in pop culture, perhaps not very well known, but it is there.
And it's near Westminster Abbey.
No, it isn't near Westminster Abbey. What I said was people used to visit it alongside Westminster Abbey in the sense that it was as famous in London as a landmark.
Right. Okay.
It is in London, though.
It is in London. Okay. So probably some sort of hospital, right?
It is a hospital.
You have to help someone.
Yeah, so like I said, I think not mad and lunatic in the sense of a person, but more of the exact definition actually I can give you is a sense of uproar and confusion in a place.
Okay.
A scene of uproar and confusion in a place. That kind of madness or lunacy.
Has it lent its name to a disease as well? Or...
No, it's not a disease. It is specifically just that uproar and confusion kind of a scenario.
Pandemonium?
You're very close in terms of the word, but no, it's not the exact synonym that I'm looking for. It is tough if you haven't heard of it. And if you're not able to get the word immediately, it is a bit tough. So it's okay. You know what? I'll give you the answer. The answer to this one is bedlam. And it comes from the Bethlehem Royal Hospital or Saint Mary Bethlehem. And Bedlam is the word that you get for pandemonium or a scene of confusion and chaos and madness.
Right.
That's where Bedlam comes from. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Good question. Wow.
Anyways, give me your next question, HK.
I'm going to follow you with another etymology question.
Hit me.
Although we think of X as something that is swift, at the heart of the word's origin is the notion of slowness and paralysis. So the electric ray, which is probably the inspiration you'll see, produces a shock to capture prey and for defense. Its Latin name was X, meaning to be numb or sluggish. And then in the late 18th century, an inventor named his creation after the Latin name of the eel. But the only difference was that his creation was actually not slow. What is this word X?
The Latin name is for that quality of the electric eel, that particular property of...
No, it's just it's a species name, basically. Right? So the taxonomical name is actually this word X. And that word comes from the meaning to be numb or sluggish. And that word is also used, for this creation by this 18th century inventor, in the late 18th century inventor. But of course, even though X means to be numb or sluggish, the creation is anything but numb or anything but slow. It's not electric eel, actually. I think it's electric rays. So slight difference. I think I think the eel is misspoken. But yeah, but I mean, it's rays. They're not eels, maybe, if it helps. Yeah.
Got it. So electric rays doesn't really help.
Yeah.
I know it is the wrong answer. I know already it is the wrong answer. But I wanted to say taser. But I also know taser's etymology is not this. Taser has a different etymology.
I think taser is an acronym, if I'm not mistaken. But...
Yes, yes.
The hint is that think ocean related. So that's probably a hint for you. The creation is something that is very closely associated with the water as well.
Oh, water invention. And which year did you mention? 18th century?
Late 18th century.
And does it have to do with electricity? Like, does it have to do with some sort of electric charge and current?
No, not necessarily. There is nothing electric about it, though now it's a weapon.
Oh, okay. I would be very surprised if this is the answer. What, torpedoes?
Yes.
Invented back then?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Late 18th century.
Okay, interesting.
Genus is, I think, torpedinus or something like that. Yeah, they call torpediniforms. That's the order of electric rays. And the genus is torpedo.
Fascinating. Wait, what? Torpedoes are that old?
Yeah, gunpowder, right?
Now that I think about it, gunpowder makes sense. But I always somehow imagined... probably because I've watched whatever Pirates of the Caribbean and stuff, that I always imagined naval warfare was more to do with cannons.
Yeah.
And back in the whatever 16th, 17th century, but 18th century, you're saying that they already had invented torpedoes. That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. I mean, there's some demonstrations that happened, but I think probably it got refined over the 19th century.
Great. So now I will move on to my next question. You spoke about something very fast, right? So here's my segue into something at the diametric opposite end. So this question actually has to do with my life recently. So I was traveling, as you might know, in Europe. I was also having the time and space to think about life in general, about feelings, about emotions, and about the human experience. And this has a little bit to do with all of those things combined. So there's a Dutch grocery chain called Jumbo Supermarket. It has 700 stores worldwide, so it is a pretty big chain. And they started something in the Netherlands, which is called the Kletskassa. Kletskassa. So that is the name in Dutch. Now, the objective of this Kletskassa was for people who felt like their day could be improved by a nice, quiet conversation or a slow moment. What was Kletskassa specifically? So what does Kletskassa mean?
And it's related to moments of silence, you said, that's going to help someone, or like a quiet conversation. Yeah.
Like I said in the introduction, slowness more than that. Not silence as much as slowness.
Slowness. Okay. So what's the meaning of this, is it? Kletskassa.
So what was Kletskassa? this is something implemented in a supermarket chain. Yeah. The project or the initiative is called Klets Kasa. What is Klets Kasa?
Do they make their trolley slower, or do they make?
Ooh, that is such a cute initiative, but no, that's not the answer. No.
Okay, is it related to something to do with the supermarket itself, like the design or the space?
Very much within the supermarket, physically.
Okay.
A change in how supermarkets normally function.
I'm reminded of IKEA thing where did they make it a house where you they make the rooms they make the sections houses or something like that.
No, nothing like that. So okay, let me actually expand a little bit more. So the Netherlands Bureau of Statistics claims that 33% of adults over 75 in the Netherlands feel moderately lonely, right? And this was meant to try to help them specifically. It was the target group for this initiative. They were trying to help the seniors who felt lonely and who felt like they did not have anybody to connect with. So they needed that slowness. And I emphasize on the word slow. Yeah.
I'm thinking, is it something to do with... I know the Netherlands are dementia villages, but where there's things that help you remind and stuff. But here I'm thinking, does someone accompany them when they're shopping? Does some robot accompany them when they're shopping?
You would be surprised. This is actually much simpler than that. Okay. This doesn't even have any technological breakthrough or any advancement along those lines. If anything, this would be what you already see in supermarkets, just turned on its head.
So supermarket, you go and pick up the stuff. In this case, that's do you give the list and someone else and then you chat around or something like that while someone is shopping for you? Or
That would be lovely, I imagine. But no, in this case, let me again give you a hint, which would probably lead you to the answer. What I said was supermarkets already have a function which is along these lines, and that is fast, and you just have to the slow version of it. Basically is what they implemented.
Checkout. Yeah, in the checkout lane, right?
Yes,
yeah.
So that is basically the answer. The fast checkout lane, they actually opened an alternative to a slow checkout lane. And this is meant for people who want to take their time with it, who don't mind waiting for a while quietly. And then when they reach the counter, they can have a conversation with the person over there. So the person behind the counter is somebody who would be willing to have a conversation and to chat and do more than just their billing and bagging of groceries. So this is what was implemented in this Dutch supermarket store. It's called Klets Kasa, which apparently in Dutch literally means slow checkout. And it became viral, I think, on social media a while back because it was this little nice initiative for people who might feel lonely, and it's not even that difficult to implement.
Yeah, it's very wholesome. So on that note of wholesomeness, I'm going to go on to this question. So in an interview, the writer of the memoir clarified this intentional misspelling. He cited the following as the reason. The why is there to denote that it's about you and what makes you happy. The same misspelling was continued and was adapted into an acclaimed movie of the same name. Now, I'm not telling the year of the movie because maybe that's a giveaway. But, can you guess the name of the movie / memoir?
Yeah. The movie and the memoir both have the name is misspelled.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
And specifically, he said, the why is there to denote that it's about you and what makes you happy.
Do you mean the letter Y is there because it is about you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know what this is. This is the pursuit of happiness.
Yes, it is. Okay.
Yeah, I did not know this though. I did not know that was the intentionality. I assumed it was intentional because that is a very obvious misspelling. But that is very cute. Wait, so who wrote this? I have no context to that.
It was written by Chris Gardner. So it's written by, I think it's kind of a real, it's based on his life story, right? So he's an American businessman and motivational speaker. So he's the one who's featured in the movie also. So Will Smith's character is Chris Gardner.
Yeah, I remember that it's based off of someone's true life experience. Also, that movie featured a Rubik's Cube. And I think I was inspired to... I already had a Rubik's Cube, but after watching the movie, I was like, okay, no, I'm going to figure out how to solve it now, which is what I did. And yeah, it's a very wholesome movie. I love it. Great movie. Great movie. Okay. Now that you have opened up the Pandora's box of pop culture and books also, let me go into something related to that. I imagine you would know this because it seems like a space that you are very familiar with and you are very interested in. So this particular famous author was an OED lexicographer, an Oxford English Dictionary lexicographer. I hope I'm pronouncing that word right. Lexicographer? Yeah. Apparently, he used his experience there later on when he became a published author. It inspired his style a lot. And let me give you some examples of that, right? So there are some scholars of his work who argue that his literary technique was specifically inspired by his experience working as a lexicographer because he drew the language of his books directly from etymological research. So he was given a lot of etymological research when he was working there. And he was working for this co-editor of OED called Henry Bradley, who has mentioned that all the words which were particularly difficult in their etymology were assigned to this particular person because he was so good at his work. So which author am I talking about who worked at the Oxford English Dictionary?
The first name that comes to mind, is it J.R.R. Tolkien?
Oh, brilliant. Crack. Easy one for you. It is Tolkien. It is J.R.R. Tolkien. Yes. He did work at the OED. And I assume you have read some of his work?
Yeah, I've read the trilogy and I've also read The Hobbit, but I haven't read the what is the other one?
Cimmerian.
Yeah.
I have to confess, I have only read a part of The Hobbit and I have basically watched the movies for the rest. So I am nowhere close to being a Tolkien enthusiast, but I do respect the kind of impact he has had. In fact, very interestingly, and he is known to be super humble, and he refused to take credit for the invention of the word hobbit for decades, apparently. He just refused to take credit for that. And everybody would assume he came up with the word. But as it turned out, an obscure list of mythical beings, which was published in 1895, came to light in 1977, and it included the word hobbits. So he had in his research somewhere encountered the word perhaps, and that is why he refused to take credit for it. Humble guy who obviously changed literature and writing in the modern English literary sphere.
Probably changed the fantasy genre in many ways. So, you know, definitely like set a very high bar for what counts as world building.
Yeah, I very interestingly, I feel like the fact that he created a world and treated it almost as if it is the most natural thing was perhaps a big leap forward from fantasy before that. Phenomenal author. Yeah. Anyways, your question next, HK.
This might be a relatively easy one. So, but also it's a book-related question. I'm going to write it out and you're probably going to get it quickly. But let's see, it's a long question. So at least let me read out the question. Don't do a Vineet. Yeah.
So, oh, we are calling Vineet out on this. Poor guy did that once.
Yeah. Okay, the quote goes, I tried to write that book for almost 10 years. Ever since I worked as a chaplain, I would go back. I was trying to work on what I call the children's hospital story. Although in all of its previous incarnations, it starred this 22-year-old hospital chaplain who was like surprisingly handsome and like hooking up with doctors. It was very embarrassing. I hope that it was just terrible. But you know, I would go back to that story and go back to it and go back to it. Then in 2010, a good friend of mine died of cancer, a young friend. And I went back to the story and I went back to it angry and needing to work. The author who's quoted is talking about their novel written while in residence in Amsterdam. So I'm going to stop there. If you know what book I'm talking about, you can let me know. Otherwise, there's like a couple of other hints about this as well. Yeah.
Right now, I have no clear answer in my head, but I would just like to clarify. So this was a book that was inspired by some hospital that this person was working at, and the chaplain was having an affair with the doctors. Is that it?
No. So the initial kind of the book was being written for almost 10 years, right? So the author was trying to write the book, and every time he would end up with the story of the chaplain who would go about, who was handsome and would go about like hooking up with doctors. But then the kind of the precipitating incident was this good friend of the author who died of cancer, who was a young friend. And then the author went back and kind of wrote the story that we know quite well now.
Okay, interesting.
And another clue was that it was written in residence in Amsterdam. That's actually kind of a big clue.
A Dutch novelist or a Dutch novel. I'm blanking.
I did not say it was a Dutch novelist. Author while in residence in Amsterdam. I did not say it was a Dutch novelist.
Fair enough, fair enough. No, I'm just trying to make connections. But yeah, right now I don't have anything to go off of.
Yeah.
Can I get the publishing date perhaps of this book? When was this book published?
Yeah, so the book was published in 2012, okay? So inside the book, there's a fictional book within that book, and apparently two books served as inspiration for that. The Blood of the Lamb by Peter DeVries and Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace.
Okay. Oh, but 2012 might be the wrong year for this, but I want to say Fault in Our Stars?
Yes, the Fault in Our Stars. It came out in 2012. The book.
Okay. It did go out in 2012. Okay. Lovely. And Amsterdam makes sense because there is a whole part of the book which takes place in Amsterdam. Yes. That's very nice. So John Green wrote the book because a friend of his passed away.
Yeah. Yeah. So the young friend who died was Esther Earle, who is apparently named in the book's dedication.
Ah, I see.
And as an avid listener of the Are You Quizzing Me? Another John Green book was recently mentioned, I think a few episodes ago, Paper Towns as well.
I did mention Paper Towns. I believe Vineet has not read John Green books enough, but I have read most of his stuff. So yeah, this is a question that that I really, really appreciate. Thanks, HK. That is lovely. Now, let me move to something else. There was a company called Washburn Crosby Company, which was a flour milling company, and it was started in the late 1800s. This eventually actually became General Mills, right, which is a lot more famous. Their product, Gold Medal Flour, kick-started a specific thing. Okay, so let me actually clarify more, a little bit more. Okay, the Gold Medal Flour ad was placed in a Saturday Evening Post in 1921. This ad featured a puzzle, and contestants were encouraged to send in the response to this puzzle. There was an overwhelming number of responses. Apparently, more than 30,000 people responded. Along with the responses, which were the solutions to the puzzle, people also sent in a lot of questions about baking. So what came out of this particular incident?
So there's a tradition of recipes being printed on flour boxes and stuff like that. Is this something related to that, or are you available?
No, that would not be the answer here. No.
Okay. Or the other one I'm thinking of is, like, I know in cornflakes, or there's like on in cereal boxes, there's this again a tradition of like either asking questions or solving something and sending the box back and getting something returned.
No. Okay. So I think my question could do with a slight clarification. I said, what did it give rise to? Let me change that slightly to say, who did it give rise to? So it's a person in question here.
1921?
Yes.
Okay. 1921. Ooh. Some sort of mascot? Is that what we're looking at?
You would not be incorrect.
Okay. Is it like a television baking show or a cooking show person, something like that?
I'm not sure if this particular person has had a baking show and television show, but
okay,
they are very closely associated with baking.
Is it the Pillsbury Dough Man?
No.
No, that's an Indian thing, is it perhaps? Is it some anthropomorphic character? Is it like, is it an actual person, or is it like a...
It's a human being.
It's a human being. Okay. I like how you said human being. Okay. And this was to answer kind of baking related questions, right? So there, is it like a character that someone like in the papers or something that you ask an expert sort of thingy?
You are very much on the right path, and which is why I said a human being, because what you had asked me was, is it an actual person? So okay, let me clarify. Okay. It's not an actual person, but it is a human being. Like, it's a fictitious human.
See, I don't know about these columns that much, but is it like some, I know, Ask Emma or this? I don't know, there are all these kind of newspaper columns, but I don't know which one specifically. There's probably a famous baking one, but I'm frankly, like, I don't have that much knowledge. But yeah.
So the intention was to answer the questions for your customers, but that is not what is exclusively the domain of this character today. So it is more generally linked with baking and the world of baking.
Do you think I would know of this person? Like, just get him honest there.
You have definitely heard of it. You might have even consumed something associated with this person. If I could be excused for being vague.
Right. I'm thinking of what sort of baking companies have like people's names on them and things like that. It's an American company.
Yes. Yeah, and that is the right path to go down.
Okay. First on Pepperidge Farms. But I presume...
No.
What's that baking-based thingy? Graham's Crackers. Is it something to... Is it, no, that's British.
No. Again, I assume you would have consumed it, but I remember the first time I saw it was when I was going to study as a student and I had no access to a kitchen. So all I had access to was a microwave, and this particular product was very easily microwavable. Gave this wonderful little cake, instant cake kind of a deal. And I was blown away with this. And this was something... very new for me.
Right. Talking about brownie mixes, right? And like this,
yes. I don't know if that is the thing that they're most famous for today, but that is what I first encountered and I have consumed the most of. So
I know the company. You're right. I've seen them, but the name is just evading me. What happened?
I'll give you the hint that it's a two-word name, so it's not like just one word or something like that. It's not Graham's Crackers or something like that. It's a first name and a last name. And I'll give you the initials. It's B and C.
Betty Crocker.
Betty Crocker is the answer. Betty Crocker is the answer. Yes. I assume you have heard of Betty Crocker, if not had Betty Crocker at least.
I don't think I've had the premix.
And Betty Crocker is not an actual person. Interestingly enough, back then, as a lot of workplaces were, this was also all male. But when they had to answer these questions, they would ask women for their expertise. The department manager, Samuel Gale, would never feel comfortable signing his own name to the advice because he suspected that women would rather hear from other women who knew their way around a kitchen. And for some reason, instead of getting an actual woman, they created a woman called Betty Crocker who would answer these questions. And that's how Betty Crocker came to be, because that was the name that was signed at the bottom of these responses to customers. The name Crocker, interestingly, was from the recently retired director of the Washburn Crosby Company. His name was William G. Crocker. And Betty was chosen just because it's a wholesome, cheerful name, apparently. So that's how Betty Crocker came to be. Okay, hit me with your next question.
Under the handle, Chang Sumat 666, this 34-year-old Taiwanese math teacher basically has a verified account that has netted over 1.7 million views and features the slogan, play hard, study hard. He appears in every clip, carefully explaining things like the differential methods in his native Mandarin. The goal is for viewers to sign up to Chang Shu's online course, which nets him over $250,000 a year, which he uses to pay his staff and produce the math videos. The question for you is, where does he upload his math videos?
Oh, okay. I had assumed before you asked this that it was YouTube, but now that would seem too straightforward. So my next guess would be TikTok?
No.
Oh, interesting. Not YouTube, not TikTok. He's uploading videos online. Instagram?
No. So there's a couple of words you have to latch on to. One is that it's a verified account. So there are certain platforms that use this term verified. So Instagram is one of them, but it's not Instagram. And also the slogan is play hard, study hard. So, you know, I hope these will inspire you to think slightly out of the box for this, website.
Interesting. Play hard, study hard, verified accounts. Verified account makes me think of Twitter, but then that probably is also not the right answer. Play hard, study hard. Oh, is it a... Oh, boy. Is it Pornhub by any chance?
It is Pornhub.
Oh, God. What's the logic? Why upload educational videos to Pornhub?
I mean, it clearly gets viewers to sign up for his online course, and that apparently helps him sustain this business that he has.
Wow. I guess there is a niche in every market in the world, I guess. Yeah, people who are interested simultaneously in adult entertainment and in mathematical education. That is fascinating. And I was thinking, play hard, work hard. And I was like, what do you mean by play hard, work hard as a hint? Oh.
Play hard, study hard, by the way.
Sorry, study hard, not work hard. Play hard, study hard. Okay. The juvenile nature of that humor is tickling my funny bone. Well done. Okay. That's a brilliant question. And... I'm tempted to end it here. You know what? I'm going to end this episode on that question because that is a really, really fun question. Thanks, HK. That brightened up my day.
We hope we don't have any under 18 listeners, you know. So if they are, I don't know if there's any setting that you have to do to mark this podcast as not safe for work. But well.
Here's my opinion on this. I feel like we did not say anything explicit. And I imagine a lot of people under 18 also know of the existence of Pornhub, but they are not allowed to visit it. So, hey, you do what is legally and morally okay with you. I'm nobody to tell you what to do. Anyways, so yeah, that is a wonderful, fantastic, hilarious question. One of the best questions I've heard on this podcast. I loved it. Okay. Before we end this episode, as usual, I have to ask a question for... next week's episode, and that will be, which Indian movie has apparently, in my opinion at least, is misspelled intentionally, and why was it misspelled? So what was the intention behind that misspelling in that Indian movie's name? And the answer for this question will be given next week. At that, I have to sign off. Thank you so much, HK, for joining us once again for this episode. You have been, as usual, a wonderful quizzer. And I will see you very soon. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And as usual, as Vineet would tell you, go ahead and subscribe to our podcast and leave a review, leave a rating. It helps us tremendously. And another thing that helps us a lot is if you recommend this podcast to somebody who you think would enjoy trivia and just juvenile humor once in a while. Like, work hard, study hard. I can't get over that. So please go ahead and recommend it to people. And if you have any suggestions for us, please reach us on our social media. We are on Instagram at @areyouquizzingme. Or you can even respond to the question that pops up on Spotify if that's where you are listening to us. And you can leave a suggestion for us.
Are we only on Instagram, Adi? Are we not on any other platforms? It seems like there are we could be featured as well. So, you know. Yeah,
I feel like we haven't launched the video version of a podcast yet. But now that this is something that you have planted the seed of in my head, I'm going to consider at some point convincing Vineet to launch our video version of the podcast on an adult entertainment website, which is not even legal in India. So I don't even know why I would do that. Okay, signing off. See you guys next week. Bye-bye. And here's the fact check for the episode. Charles I was beheaded in 1649. The earliest recorded usage of modern torpedoes in both warfare and even as a demo was in the very early 19th century. Betty Crocker has appeared on both radio and television shows in the United States of America. And that's all for the fact check.